AG1 is a comprehensive and convenient blend of over 70 high-quality ingredients. And what that means is each morning when I wake up, before I do anything else, I drink AG1 to set me up for the day. It keeps me clear-headed, full of energy, and focused on whatever I need to do, like writing the fighting cock, for example. One scoop, once a day, before breakfast, and that's it. I've actually found that I've not been needing coffee in the morning to get me started. I've still been drinking coffee, because I love coffee, but it's not because it's like a necessity to do so. AG1 is made out of the highest quality ingredients subject to the strictest manufacturing standards. AG1 is NSF certified for sport, and this process involves exhaustive testing and verification that every serving of AG1 is exactly what you see on the label. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs for your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/thefightingcock. That's drinkag1.com/thefightingcock to get started. And to help the podcast. Thank you very much. Have a great day and enjoy the show.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Cock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Cock.
A camel channel.
Hello, welcome to the Fighting Cock podcast, season 12, episode 7. Big John Bass in for Flav. Joined by Spooky. How are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. You?
I'm all good. And we're also joined by Cal.
Good.
Cal, how are you, mate?
Yeah, man. I've got a question for you. Is that all right?
Yeah, mate. Go on.
We have a new Prime Minister. I know that you're a Tory member, so I was just wondering which one you voted for.
For fuck's sake. Now, there's only one Tory member of the Fighting Cock and Associates, and that is Mark. So Mark Nesbitt, he'll have to answer for the Tories as part of this one. I was going to actually just say that I do feel a little bit like, you know, if you ever go to the West End when there's like a big American star over, like Hugh Jackman's doing like something in the West End, and then you book tickets for you and your missus and you're like, right, we'll go for dinner afterwards, and you make it this big thing, we're going to see Hugh Jackman, and you get there and it's the understudy and it's Barry from EastEnders. that's how the listeners are currently feeling with me stepping in for Flav. So I'll do my very best to hold it down. Boys, three wins, one draw. We've played Chelsea away, we've played West Ham away. It's not a bad start. Spook, how are we feeling? Mate. How are we feeling at this point in time, mate?
I'm all right. You know what I'm like, man. I'm forever an optimist. Some would say deluded. But I like the way we've started because we haven't peaked too early. We've had some tough games. You know, there's that thing that's been done to death now. So it's probably the last time I mention it. But if you match up the results to last season, we're up on every single one. Do you know what I'm saying? So, like, we've improved. Obviously, people expect us to go to Chelsea and win. People expect us to go to West Ham and win. But we've done all right. We've done all right without excelling. You know, we've had moments where we've looked really, really good and you can kind of tell what we would look like at full pelt. But we've done enough so far to accumulate the points. And like, you know, I'm still positive. I still think we can do something this season. You can only beat what's stuck in front of you. Do you know what I mean? And I think we can beat most teams in the Premier League. How's that for positivity?
That was good. I enjoyed it. Cal, right. I'm going to give you a chance to tell me how you're. How you're feeling at this current moment in time, and then we'll get right into Fulham. We'll talk about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think one thing to say is there's only two undefeated teams left in the Premier League, and they're Tottenham and Manchester City. You know. What a great thing to say, and obviously we're meeting them on Saturday. But yeah, like Spook said, you know, Chelsea and West Ham, that's their two biggest games. They'll in Chelsea particularly will try to play that down. But it is their biggest game, and stylistically, Chelsea are a difficult matchup for us. So for us to come through that run of games, you know, and I think we've had three and three, so three away games, three home games. To come out of West Ham and Chelsea with two draws. And then Saturday, the performance, I actually think the scoreline really flattered Fulham on Saturday.
Yeah, massively.
I know we're going to get into the game in a minute. So I'm actually happy of where we're at. Going into the Champions League with this run, Conte's starting to slowly bring players into the fold now. So yeah, I'm really pleased about where we are right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, the reason that I asked you that is because I think it's fair to say after West Ham, there were a few dissenting voices. There were some concerns from the wider fan base. There were some justifications for some of that stuff. You know, are we playing great football. Are there similarities to what was happening in Mourinho? There was some kind of over the top stuff like,
I hate that. I hate the Mourinho comparison, man.
It's so it's quite lazy, stupid.
It's lazy as fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, that was it. I mean, I can do a 10-minute rant about the comparison, but I won't. I'll just save everyone's ears from being destroyed. Yeah.
Save it. Well, look. Let me ask you this, then, Spook. Fulham game. I think it's fair to say that's much more what we wanted to see. It was a superb performance. Yeah. I thought it was a swashbuckling game. I think I said on five statements on our Patreon. I thought it was brilliant. So yeah, what do you think about the Fulham game? Have we restored some of this flair and stylistic stuff that people wanted to see, Spook?
It's tricky, right? Because we have to wait until we play another team that's slightly above Fulham's levels, you know, without disrespecting Fulham, because they're a decent team, but they play quite open. But it was Tottenham's energy from the first minute. And I think Romero and Bentancur coming back into the team kind of shows maybe the lack of depth that we really have got, if you want to go towards discussing like-for-like replacements for players. Both are really good on the ball, really comfortable on the ball, kind of progressive and tidy. And that just adds to the tempo. And Spurs were just, there was urgent play to their movement. You know, we looked like we wanted to go out there and do something. And is that cliche, isn't it? On another day, we're 4-0 up in that first half. You know what I mean? On another day, Son scores a brace or a hat-trick. So the football was perfect. I mean, it was entertaining. You're getting up behind the team. You're getting confident about the football. You're creating. You know, the moment Tottenham can't create is when you start after, you know, you have to worry about that. So yeah, I was well chuffed. Smashed them 2-1 basically in the end.
We did smash them 2. It could have been 5, couldn't it, Cal?
Oh, good. You know, 23 shots we had, 10 on target, a couple of VARs, and yeah, we win 4-1. You know, VAR goes our way, or if you know we just got rid of VAR altogether, then yeah, maybe we win 4-1. But yeah, no, I thought we were great. I thought Bentancur had a brilliant game. I thought he was our man of the match.
He's so good, man. He's silk.
He was. And one criticism I've had of Bentancur is that it takes him an hour to get going. A lot of the time, it takes him 60 minutes to kind of warm into the game. But on Saturday, for whatever reason, perhaps because he didn't play midweek and everybody else did, he just seemed that little bit ahead of everyone else. And you're right, Spook. He was like silk. He was just brilliant from the first whistle. For me, he was man of the match. I thought he was so good. Yeah. And for now, him and Højbjerg, who I've really warmed to, are our best partnership. But I have absolute belief that Bissouma and Skip are gonna be really good for us as well. And actually, if you think about it, 18 months ago, you know, we're talking about Mourinho era. When Mourinho was there, what position would you have said we needed to strengthen the most? And you'd say midfield, wouldn't you? That central midfield area. It would have been. And now look at it. Look at the riches that we have in that position. Yeah, I thought we were great. I thought we was really good. Sessegnon had an okay game. Longley, I thought he was pretty good. I thought he had a really good... Another one like Silksburg. He was so good on the ball.
He's another footballer. Do you know what I mean? He's someone who... I mean, this is like the non-analytical version of me kind of reviewing his performance, but he looks comfortable on the ball, right? Someone, I don't know who it was, probably the extra inch, to be fair, polluting my timeline, saying that he's going to cost us a few goals. And I didn't quite see that. I didn't quite understand what they meant by that. If he wasn't there, I apologise, but maybe I don't. Fuck it. It was some tactical nerd saying that he will cost us. And I don't know if it's a positioning thing. I don't know if he was lackadaisical at any point in the game. I didn't see it myself. But yeah, you kind of see why these players, you know, they kind of fit a profile, a particular type of profile. Obviously, there's anomalies in the team. I mean, Emerson is still, you don't really know what he is from time to time. He gets into positions that should really be producing quality deliveries, but we know he can't deliver the ball. But he also played all right. I thought, when my uncle, who hates absolutely everything, says that he thought he played all right, I'm kind of like, fuck, what am I missing here? Maybe I should be a little bit more open to Emerson and his kind of progress on that right side. But
yeah,
it was one of those games, man. It was one of those games where there was very few negatives. You, wasn't the type of game to focus on anything negative, I don't think.
Yeah, absolutely. Had a tweet from Mike from Queens who said, were you nervous at any point on Saturday? I was not, and it was a weird feeling. I think that's kind of how a lot of people felt, right? Is that there was basically a calmness around what we were doing. And that feeling of calm, I think, is weird for us because we're not used to it. Because we're used to thinking this is going to go wrong at some point. And when you look at a 2-1 scoreline, if you hadn't seen the game, it was a 3 o'clock kickoff. A lot of people hadn't seen it. You might have thought, oh, we've struggled again, like, to get a result here. But actually, the reality was that we were in complete control, basically, of this game pretty much the entirety of the time. And yeah, I thought, Longley, just composure. I guess, Spook, maybe the point was, when you have players who want to play the ball and want to pass and want to be a bit more creative, it's much harder to be creative than it is to be destructive. So if you're asking a defender to be more creative, they're literally taking more chances, essentially.
Yeah,
and that's
why
you see these players who, like Burnley players, who you can never find a mistake that they've made that's cost them them team like a goal, because they just boot it clear every time. So it's like, it's actually fine to do that if that's the way you want to play. But we want to be creative from the back. So we require players to take risks. So yeah, that's fine. That's what comes with the territory. And I think, to be honest, what I thought was really interesting about this whole Fulham game is the players that did come in actually played really well. And what this has illustrated for us is that squad depth we spoke about. And people have been talking about dropping players versus rotating players and squad depth versus, you know, the quality of the squad and all this stuff. And it's like, look, fundamentally, you can't just have 11 quality players. You do need a squad of players. And whether that's rotation, dropping, whatever you want to call it, you need those players to come in, and at a minimum, the quality can't drop. And so I think that's what we had from Longley and Richarlison in particular. I thought they were brilliant. So yeah, I thought it was a good performance. Let's just talk about Richarlison, because I thought, one, he was pretty unlucky with his one that hit the post. That volley was incredible. Oh. And how would you have felt, Cal, if that goal had counted? Because I think that eruption after the goal was amazing. And it's one of those things we've been robbed by VAR. But he was brilliant, wasn't he?
Oh, so good. And that effort that hit the inside of the post and came out, the quality, it just hit it on the volley, just on the outside of his boot, hits the post. It was such a good effort. And imagine that as a first goal for Spurs at a club like Spurs, where we've celebrated flair players throughout our 140-year history. Happy birthday to Tottenham today, by the way. It would have been something special. And I'm quite vocal about how much I hate VAR. And the main reason I hate VAR is because it robs us of that joy of scoring a goal. And I've noticed in myself that I do not celebrate goals as passionately as I used to. There's always just a concern that someone's going to be an armpit offside, or they're going to find a foul or whatever. And it's just kind of spoiled it. And actually, on Saturday, because we were 2-1 up, because it was a little bit nervy, to answer the chap's question about feeling nervy, I was a little bit nervy after Mitrovic's goal, which was a well-taken goal. Romero got done a bit, but after that, I was a little bit nervy. But so for Richarlison, I thought, to put us 3-1 up, I actually let go. I actually let myself celebrate, because I thought, well, it's a cutback. He's definitely going to be onside. We're not going to have an issue there. And I was fucking, yes, yes, you know, calling Fulham key-sheeting cunts and all of that. And and then the fucking VAR came up, and I was just spitting feathers about how much I hate VAR, because, yeah, it's just ruined it. And it would have been so good for him to get his first goal in a situation.
I gave everything, man, to that celebration. Yeah. I was hugging the bloke next to me, slapping his back. Yep. It was just... wonderful emotional release that you the way you want to celebrate every moment, and that was a moment for him. Do you know what I mean? He's such a dramatic footballer as well, just over the top, but he can back it up, you know, because you saw that technique in the volley. Do you get what I'm saying? He's a Brazilian footballer, and he's had a couple of shots this season where he hasn't pulled the trigger. He pulled the trigger on that, and he was unlucky, and then he follows it up. Obviously, VAR destroys the moment. And it's exhausting, because you do feel like all that emotion has just been pushed into the ether and just lost forever. And he just stood there spent, like completely done. like, you know, I don't know, just being with the brass and it was over. So I don't know the analogy, man. I'm not Bardi. Fuck it. I'm not good at analogies anymore. I've been doing this for 15 years. I've run out. But and the thing is, 3-1 would have been a better scoreline. Do you know what I'm saying? It would have been closer to a more convincing win on paper. But everyone who was at the game, Fulham included, knew they got away with it on the day. They really did get away with it. And to answer the question about nerves, I was momentarily nervous when they scored, because we were rattled. I don't know if you noticed, for a couple of minutes after their goal, we kind of lost shape for a moment, and then we got hold of the ball again. So it was a good test. The Spurs have crumbled in the past in those type of moments. So
for sure,
there's a good reaction to it.
Definitely, I think. I mean, obviously, Cal knows very well about boxing. And boxers, sometimes you take a smash in the face and you are momentarily stunned and you have to get your composure, you have to get your legs back before you're basically out of the fight before it's begun, right? And that's kind of what we saw. It's like, it's all right, you are going to concede goals sometimes in games. That's fine, it's going to happen. It's more about how you come back from that. And I think you're right, Spook. Like, there was a momentary, oh, fuck, like, this is going to cost us. But actually, I think what we've seen this year is that players can just kind of shake that off and they can get back to what's happening. I think basically that comes down to the way that Conte works is like, just do the thing that I've told you to do. If you just keep doing that relentlessly and takes away their like kind of need for them to think over and above what they need to do. So when things don't go well, you just go back to that. You go back to those basics. When we're playing really well, you see things sprinkled on top of that. And that's what makes it exciting. That's what I thought we saw in this game.
Yeah, I was just going to add to that that it's from our perspective, I guess it's a trust issue, because like we like to pretend Spurs is a thing, right? We like to pretend that the things that happen to Tottenham doesn't happen to any other football club. That's not simply not true. And the big change with Spurs under Conte is that they are relentless. Like, the mental attitude is consistent. We go down, not a problem. We're going to get back into the game. And it's a very instinctive and natural, very organic belief that they've got. Doesn't look like desperation. We've never really looked rattled throughout an entire game. Even though people think that, you know, Forest had us pushed back, but we were always comfortable in that game as well. So we just have to get used to trusting Spurs that it isn't a disaster if we concede. It's a good trait to have, not to believe that you can lose a game of football, and to always be in a position to maybe win it. It's a strong trait,
for sure. And I think that's definitely what Conte brings, is that kind of the mental side of the game. And I think actually a lot of the reasons that we've suffered over the years has been kind of mental collapses as much as anything that have cost us on the pitch. And one of those things that Conte also brings is making big decisions. One of the big decisions he made before this game was to include Richarlison from the start. I think most people thought it was going to be Son, just given that Son hasn't been on the best of form this season, or the form that we know he can reach. He actually came in for Deki, which was interesting. How do you feel that Son played, Cal? Because I think people were expecting him to be... Okay, I'm not going to use the D word. He was rotated. I think people were expecting him to be rotated for this game. He wasn't, and in fact, I think actually that worked really well. But what did you think of when you saw it and saw that Son was still in and actually Kulusevski was going to be left out? And how did you think it worked with those three, and how did Son play?
I actually thought Son was much better, and he was really unlucky not to score. And I think once he scores a goal, I think it's that age-old adage of all he needs is a goal. And if he gets a goal, he'll be back again. And I think that's very true with Son. I actually thought he was very good, and I actually wasn't too surprised that it was Kulusevski that was took out, because I actually thought against West Ham, I thought he was particularly poor against West Ham. So was Son, but Son was not great against West Ham at all. But I thought Kulusevski was not up to his usual level at all. I thought he had quite a poor game. So I wasn't surprised that he was taken out. And you've also got to think about Champions League in midweek as well. And I think in the Champions League, I think he might revert back to the trusted Son, Kane and Kulusevski, and then maybe put Richarlison back in for the Man City game. But there's so many big games coming up that it's you know, people are going to come in and out and it's going to be rotation. There's even talk about rotating Kane, and Kane took off, you know, as a sub, which never happens. He never gets subbed off, but he did. And I thought Son was fine. I thought he had a good game. He had a couple of chances. He was lively. I thought he was much better than, maybe not up to his usual standards, but I thought he was much better than he has been of late.
Yeah, Spook, what did you make of Son's performance, mate?
Yeah, I completely agree with Cal, to be fair. You know, he scores. I mean, he scores on every other occasion, right? It's one of those weird things that you have in football where you had it with Kane, where he was overthinking everything and he wasn't scoring. You know, every time Kane doesn't go three or four games without scoring, it's like, the fuck is wrong with him? It's a crisis. With Son, he does seem to have this personality where it does affect him more. And he's definitely been overthinking it. And it's definitely impacted the way he's played his football, like his flow and just his decision-making. But in this game, like Cal said, he was bang on it. What can you do, man? He got on the end of so many good chances and he was just unlucky, you know, whether it was a keeper or the woodwork. So I'm not worried about him. He loves a goal against City, right? So yeah. If you do the maths, maybe we're in for a bit of a treat on Saturday.
Yeah, let's hope so. I think one of the things that we've learned about Son, obviously the last couple of weeks in Spurs podcast sphere, it's been the question, well, what do we do about Son? Does he need to be dropped? Does he need to be rotated? All this stuff, right? The thing I think, like, not many people have said anyway, is that the thing of, we know he's streaky. It's like, well, if you know he's streaky, we've never seen him dropped to get out of that, ever. We've never gone, he's been streaky, so he's getting dropped. He just plays until he then is not streaky. So I think Conte is like, he's been pretty shrewd in just going, well, I'm not going to take him out because then it's going to take him longer. Just has to basically ride this out. And his back catalogue of goals and seasons for Spurs have never included a spell on the bench after he got in the side. So I don't really believe that makes actually sense for him to be basically taken out for Richarlison. So I think that was a really shrewd move from Conte to make the rotation in the squad Kulusevski and just keep Son ticking over, because he was definitely much better. And also, look, I wonder if there's an element of, you know, Son's personality where it has rattled him a little bit having someone else there, right?
Maybe. And
you need to consider that there's an emotional aspect of the manager going, look, I'm not going to drop you. You're then playing badly for a couple of games, and you think, well, you are eventually, like, you, this is happening. And then when you think it's going to happen, he goes, no, I'm going to rotate someone else out. And, like, you're the guy, like, just deliver. So I think, you know, we've got to hope that this, the kind of streakiness of Son, he just plays his way out of it, like he always does. That's what I want to be super clear on that. But just quickly on Richarlison, Højbjerg was speaking with Ben Haynes at Spurs Play, and there's a little clip that's been circulated today, which has been really good. He spoke really well about Richarlison, Cal. I think it's fair to say he has fit into Spurs so quickly and so well. It was great, wasn't it? It was really good to hear another player talk about a new player joining in that way.
Yeah, it's quite good content, isn't it, that they do after the game? Just, you know, just Ben Haynes talking to Højbjerg, who's a very good speaker. And just the way they were talking about Richarlison, he's clearly very popular in the dressing room. He's, you know, they're obviously really happy to have him there. But he's infectious, isn't he? Yeah. And he's one of those players that it's been said quite a bit that you hate him when he plays for somebody else, but when he's at your club, you love him. And I do follow an Everton fan, and he said to me, he goes, you're going to love him. Like, you're going to love him. And just after what we thought was going to be a goal, he rips his shirt off and does all that, gets a book in. We're thinking, yes, yes. And it gets taken away, whatever. He doesn't let his head drop. Yeah. And then Højbjerg plays a long ball over the top, and Richarlison wins the throw in. And he fist pumped just like he'd scored the goal. Like, he celebrated, like, yes. Won the throw in the corner, near their goal. We've got this game wrapped up, kind of thing. He's in it. He is completely bought in to Conte, to Tottenham. Yeah, no, love him. Love the guy. So happy.
Yeah, he was, he really was, he loves it, basically, which is really nice to see. Talking of Højbjerg, I thought he was fantastic again. Is he like just low key having a really fucking good season, Spook? Because I feel like Højbjerg has been really good, and he took his goal great. I thought he played really well in that game, and he's just been very good. Like, where are you at with Højbjerg? Because I think he's a very divisive.
I dislike
character.
Him. I don't dislike him. I obviously, Twitter's not the best place for discussion about football ever. But you know, we're all on it. We all see it. And a lot of people think he just doesn't do enough of anything. But then we're the same fan base that didn't rate Moussa Dembélé. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, didn't really understand what it was that he brought to the team. Well, he doesn't score, doesn't assist. So what is he actually doing out on the pitch? And it's like, well, he's functioning at a level that allows everyone else to get on with everything. And he retains the ball. And I think with Højbjerg, it's similar in that he does a lot of the grafting, right? He does the unfancied stuff. But he's also quite progressive as well. People will always focus on the misplaced pass, but look at the drive to score that the opening goal against Fulham. Because up until then, we were taking too many touches. We were trying to do too much in and around the penalty area, and he just drove through and just placed it. And there's something about him that you understand why he gets picked. You understand why Conte rates him. Because he will put in the graft in the game, and yeah, he's not as silky as Bentancur. You know, you might just think that comparing him to Eriksen and is, you know, is the right thing to do. He's not that type of player. For what he does, he's very, very effective, and he's obviously a strong personality. He's obviously well liked and respected in the dressing room. He's professional as fuck. He's a good speaker, like Cal said, and the way he was talking about Richarlison as well kind of turned me on a bit. Do you know what I'm saying? I was kind of like, I like the affinity, the connection that I have with these players is as strong as the one I had with under Pochettino, and that's what I want back from Tottenham. I want to feel that these people are fighting for me and the badge and the rest of it. I know it doesn't. It's a bit, you know, it's a bit simple. You know, simplifying football. Yeah. You like a? Did you like Stefan Freund? Did you like Jamie O'Hara? Well, no, because they were fucking crap, really. You know, they were glorified. They were glorified during a time when Spurs were pretty shit. Whereas Spurs at the minute have got loads of quality players. We've got world class players in there. You know, and I don't want to start talking about, well, we can do better. Yeah, sure, we can replace maybe four or five players in the team and buy better players for a lot of money. But where I'm at with him is, I do rate him. I do like him. I think he's important. And again, like Cal said, I think we have options there. We will have to wait and see what Bissouma brings to the team in comparison, whether it changes the dynamic of the midfield. But we don't have to hate Tottenham players. Do you know what I mean? You don't have to have favourites in these positions. You don't have to hate one to want another one. You can. It's a squad. It's a squad game. So
it is. And actually, to stick up for some of these new players, Longley's first game under Conte, competitive game under Conte. Yeah. So I think, you know, I don't know who made the comment on Twitter, but I thought he was very good, and I think he'll fit into the team quite well. And the same with Bissouma. He's just come into this team. He's just working under Conte for the first time. He was okay against West Ham. He had moments where he was quite good, and he had moments where he was quite poor. But I'm convinced exactly. By November, I think all of them will be completely at it. I think on a five statements last season, I think I might have called Højbjerg a hider. Because I might have even done it. I did. And I probably did it on a main pod as well. But I think he's great. And, you know, I think he's been really, really good for Spurs. And I think he's having a he started the season off really well. We've actually got quite a lot of leaders in that team as well.
Yeah.
You know, Kane, Son, Højbjerg, Hugo Lloris, Eric Dier. You know, we've got a lot of players, Richarlison. We've got a lot of players that are leaders and that are born winners and that are buying into Conte. And I think with the season, you know, the season the way it is with the World Cup, everything else, the way we've started, undefeated, 4 wins, 2 draws. You know, I think we're only going to get better as we go.
Yeah.
And I think we've got a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, 100%. Just on the Højbjerg thing, I think for me, this is a bit of a hot take, I guess. For me, he's basically like a centre midfield Emil Heskey. Now, bear with me. The reason I say that is because when Emil Heskey used to play for England, everyone was like, what the fuck is this guy doing for England? He's fucking shit. He looks uncomfortable. He's big. He's slow. He's cumbersome. Every single strike partner who played with him, Michael Owen especially, was just like, I just love playing with the guy. Like, he just makes me better. And I feel that basically Højbjerg is that. If you look at his performance, if you just, you know, like player cam on Sky, like in the early, like, noughties, if you just watched him, you'd be like, oh, God, like, this is, like, pretty slow and clunky at times, right? But when you see the other players around him and their movement off of him, because he can pick a pass and he can do those things, in the same way as the ball gets lofted up to Heskey, he knows he's going to flick it on. So Owen's already on his bike, right? It's that kind of player where I think he's basically underappreciated on the eye because he doesn't look, he doesn't glide, right? He's not like a Modric or a Dembele. He doesn't have the, like, kind of aesthetically pleasing style. But nonetheless, I think he's a very, very effective player, and I think he does a very good job for us, and I think he's having a great season. He also mentioned, as part of this interview, he was talking about Richarlison, but he also mentioned Lloris. 10 seasons with Spurs for Hugo Lloris, which is unbelievable. I remember at the time when we signed him, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be great. We're going to have this guy for 2 years before he ends up at Barcelona or Real Madrid. This is going to be fantastic. 10 years, Spook. World Cup winning captain. Is he a bit underrated? Because he really should be like top tier legend degree. And I'm not saying that he isn't. I'm not saying that if you are someone, they go, oh yeah, yeah. But no one really talks about him. Like, he's not lauded. And is that because of
you mean by us or by everyone else?
I mean everyone. Us, the wider footballing public, everyone. Nobody, good or bad, talks about Hugo Lloris. Just doesn't. No one talks about him. And I find it amazing.
It is weird. It's one of those things where you're so good and so reliable and so consistent that you're not appreciated as much. Yeah,
exactly.
Especially goalkeepers as well. It's that kind of dreaded position in it. You know, you can make mistakes. And unlike losing the ball in the centre of midfield, if you lose the ball as a goalkeeper, you can concede. You know, it's you need elite decision making to be that consistent. You know, Robinson was great. I loved Robinson, but he'd have patches where he was just not good enough. And, you know, just not world-class. And whereas Hugo is, and he shouldn't be undervalued or underrated. But somehow we've got away with not having to entertain him being sold to Real Madrid or someone coming in for him from the continent. He could have gone anywhere, to be fair, arguably. You know, and yet for some reason, I can't answer the question. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what. I mean, I love him, and look. I'll tell you what. This is the way to answer it. We are fucked trying to replace this guy.
Big time.
Like, do you know? I don't know anything about goalkeepers on the continent. I think someone said that his understudy at France is worth a look. I don't know where he's at. I want to say AC Milan. I hope I got that right. But I don't know anything. I'll have to YouTube it. So we're going to have to go out there and buy someone, sign someone, maybe for a lot of money, that is as good as what Hugo was when we signed him. You know, that kind of like highly rated goalkeeper, get him in before the big team comes in to buy him. And that's how good he is, that we cannot just bring in one of our normal goalkeeping understudies to do the job. Because it's a massive position. It's as important as Harry Kane up front for Tottenham, arguably in a completely different way.
Yeah, 100%. I used to say that like you can tell a good defender because you don't notice them, but the game has changed so much now that they need to impact on the game. So that no longer holds true. But I do think it holds true for goalkeepers. If you just don't notice them and you just kind of think, oh, like, just going about their business. They make the saves they're supposed to make. They catch the things they're supposed to catch. They pass and clear out the back. If you're just kind of not paying attention to the goalkeeper doing a good job, I feel like Hugo's pretty much been like that for 10 years, which is incredible. Like, it's incredible. There was one bit, I think, towards the end of Poch's reign, which there were a lot of players that going through some fucking awful form then.
I was just about to mention this, but
yeah.
You got it.
People were starting to ask questions like, oh, do we need to look at replacements? And there was a lot of talk about maybe we let him go. But he's actually been, I think the last 2 years have been well up there with his best form. I think he's been really good.
He's recently matured like a fine wine.
Absolutely, absolutely. Cal, where are you at with Hugo? And why is he? I don't want to say he's underrated or overrated. He's just like the middle. He's basically the Bermuda Triangle of where opinions go. Like, no one wants to give an opinion, good or bad, on him. He's just like people just they've forgotten about him. Basically, why is that?
I think there's a couple of things. He's at Tottenham, so he's not. If he was at Liverpool, Manchester United, you know, people still talk about David De Gea like he's anywhere near as good as Hugo Lloris. He's nowhere near as good as Hugo Lloris. He's fucking muck compared to Lloris. But statistically, you look at the stats for goalkeepers every season, Lloris is at the top in terms of statistics. Like, he's always at the top. He's at Tottenham, so there's that. There's a Tottenham tax, if you like. And it's not a sexy position. I think you're right, John. I remember when we signed him thinking, oh, why are we signing a goalkeeper? We've got Brad Friedel. He's all right. That'll do. I remember feeling like, oh, yeah, that'll do. And he's just ended up being a club legend and a brilliant performer throughout his time. I think there is, I think he is suffering as well because of that period that you two talk about, where during Poch's last couple of seasons, he made some mistakes. He wasn't great. There was obviously the mistake against Southampton where Danny Ings scored that wasn't great. I think that might have still been when Pochettino was there. But I actually have to credit Jose Mourinho. And I actually think Jose Mourinho's goalkeeper coach who he brought with him, I actually started to notice an uptick in performance from Hugo after the goalkeeper coach came in. Because I think he was the same goalkeeper coach that he had at Manchester United when he had David De Gea, and David De Gea had a good run under him as well, until he went to the World Cup and he went to shit. But I think Jose did a good job with him. I think he respected Jose. And I think he's just carried on. I think he's just carried on since then. I think that was the uptick. And then he's just, yep, I've got my passion back. I'm happy. I'm ready to go again. And I think he's just suffering because of that, because most teams don't watch Spurs other than the twice a year their team plays them, whether that's fans or your Gary Neville's or Jamie Carragher's. So yeah, I think he's amazing. And 10 years and I don't know how long we're going to keep him for. In terms of replacement, I think Dean Henderson would actually be a decent replacement. I'm not saying that because of the penalty. I actually think he's a pretty good goalkeeper. I do think he's a really good goalkeeper.
He's on loan from United, though, isn't he?
Yeah, they wouldn't sell
him. The only tricky thing, isn't it?
Fully, and I hope we'd have to replace him for another two seasons at least.
Anyway. Yeah. Also, the other plus side of him getting to 10 years is we're going to get another testimonial like Ledley King's. And if you think about all the players that have played with Hugo over the years, that could be quite a fucking night of football. So let's see when that happens, because that could be fucking great when he finally finishes to do that. I think would be pretty special. So yeah, we'll see. It'd be a bit weird to do it, obviously, because it's a fucked up season anyway because of the World Cup. But it'd be nice to see that happen at some point, especially in the new stadium. Right, it'll probably be full for it. Like, you could really get quite a special lineup for that. You know, France 11 versus Spurs 11. That would be fucking sick.
Did either of you go to the Ledley King testimonial?
No, one of my best friends.
I didn't.
Carl Tonkin, regular listener of the pod, he went to it and he said it's probably like one of the most emotional nights of football he's ever had. He said it was fantastic.
I went with T. Me and T went. And it's probably my favourite game of football I've ever been to, because it was just pure 24-carat Spurs. It was just all about Tottenham. It was Tottenham against Tottenham. Ledley King, Teddy Sheringham scored and celebrated right in front of me. And for 11-year-old me, that was fucking heaven, until the cunt left. It would be great to see, you know, say it happened the end of next season when his contract ends. Hopefully signs an extension. If he did Conte's Tottenham against Poch's Tottenham, and Poch comes back and he weighs 25 stone, and Yabatongan and Toby Alderweireld are there, and the current team just fucking slump them. You have Harry Kane play a half for each team, and it'd be special. I would love to see a testimony for Hugo. More than deserves it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, look, just imagine like a Modric, Dembele midfield with like Bale, Kane, Son, Van der Vaart.
It's just mad. Like, just fucking madness.
We've had some unbelievable players, haven't we?
Yeah.
Anyway, we don't want to reminisce too much. But talking about unbelievable players, I mentioned Bale there. Obviously, Gareth Bale, synonymous with the Champions League. We're back in the fucking Champions League. I don't know if you boys are aware of that. We're fucking back. Which is going to be great. So we've got Marseille this week. Now we're going to do a proper preview of the Marseille game on Patreon. Flav, I think, will be back for that. Joined by Mark, as usual, for the preview pods on Patreon. If you want to join the Patreon, it's patreon.com/thefightingcock. So go and have a look, sign up. There's loads of pods, previews, five statements, just generally loads of Spurs-related content.
And the other pod.
And the other pod.
The other pod is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it is just so good. It's my favorite thing. It's my favorite. I don't listen to many podcasts, but it is my favorite podcast, is the other podcast.
So yeah, good. Which is basically everything else but Spurs. So if you want a little bit of a break from Spurs, but you still want the Fighting Cock feel, then the other pod on Patreon. So yeah, go and check that out. Spook, how are you feeling about Champions League being back at White Hart Lane? How are you feeling
buzzy.
About that? I'm excited.
Buzzy, man. Under the lights, midweek games, Wednesday nights. What is there to moan about? This is it. This is what we wanted, right? This is what we earned off the back of last season. It's one of those weird groups, isn't it? It just feels... Someone said it looks like a Europa League group, like, just in terms of no real massive glamour ties. But I think every team, as comfortable as it might appear to be on paper, they all could be quite tricky. So I think it's a really big test. You know, I want to see this kind of fallacy around Conte not being able to manage two games a week, you know, thing. His poor record in the Champions League and the rest of it. It's interesting. I think the reason I'm quietly confident is because we don't get up for, the players and the supporters do not get up for Europa or the conference. Do you know what I'm saying? It's just this, it's a chore. It's an obstacle. It's obstructive. And it's just lifeless. Champions League, though, when that music kicks in, that's what the players are there for. They'd be fucking buzzing as much as we are. So if you're talking about watching Spurs start quickly, I'm hoping that's exactly what we do on Wednesday night. Just up and at them. The only way to do it.
Yeah, I think everyone agrees, Cal, that we wanted... I think people like those big ties because that's why you're in the Champions League, to play it. But I think we need to, again, it's a mentality shift of what we were talking about before, about rotating players versus dropping players and bigger squads and all this stuff. I think we also need a mentality shift of, like, let's get through the group so we can get some big ties. And then, like, let's see where it takes us, kind of thing. Because I think we've definitely got a chance of doing something. What do you think will be the lineup for this game? Do you think he's going to change it much, or do you think he's going to stay with roughly the same team? What do you think?
It's interesting, because if we were playing anybody else but City away, that's the thing. He's made five changes this weekend, made a few subs as well, took Kane off. I do think the front three is going to be the tried and trusted of Son, Kulusevski and Kane. It's the back three which interests me. Does he keep Longley in and then keep Ben Davies for Saturday? I think Romero will start. He looked very tired towards the end of the Fulham game, and he really got done by Mitrovic for them when he pulled that goal back. He looked tired. Even when it went in, he just kind of slumped his shoulders. Do you put Sanchez in, or does Sanchez come in for City? I don't think so. I think he's going to go with the tried and trusted. I don't think there's going to be massive. I think Perisic will start. Perisic should play every Champions League game. But I think he'll go with the tried and trusted other than that, really. I think it'll be the usual back three. I think it'll be Perisic and Emerson Royale. I'd love to see Spence get a game at some point. Although I actually saw the other day on Conte Cam it was another clip, that Matt Doherty was stripped, ready to come on. And I do want to see another right wing back get a chance at some point. But I do think it'll be the tried and trusted and Perisic as well.
Yeah, fair enough. So we had a tweet from Elliot Rogers, who asks, we win against Marseille or Man City, which do you pick? So, Spook, going off what Cal just said there, I think this is going to be interesting. The fact that these games are back-to-back, right? If you're gonna rotate, are you going to rotate and put in all the big guns for your first Champions League game back, or do you have a look ahead to next week? So what are you going for? Marseille or Man City, if you could pick?
Now I was kind of agreeing with Cal, but City's the bigger game?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So I think it means more, even though it's really early. We're not gonna do an Arsenal, right? If we beat City on Saturday, that's guaranteed we're gonna win the league this season. It doesn't work like that. But the statement it puts out there, psychologically, the uplift it gives us and the players, and also rattles the City again, because if City can't get past us on Saturday, that's what, like, 2 years running, right? I mean, we have a hoodoo over them. They can't, for whatever reason, they're not comfortable playing against us. Anything can happen on Saturday, but we need to be ready for any version of City. And to do that, we need to be our very strongest. So we rotate in the Champions League on Wednesday, I think.
I think we've got it right.
And like Cal said, rotating by starting Perisic is not a bad thing, is it? Like, really? For that type of game where it could be a little bit, I want to say it's a little bit slower than the Premier League. The Champions League tends to be the football. People a bit more edgy, players a bit more edgy sometimes. I think we're going to be all right. But to answer the question, does he actually ask which one would I choose to win?
We win against Marseille or Man City, which do you pick?
I would pick City without a doubt, yeah.
Yeah, the reason I think that, and Spook, you alluded to it there a little bit, mate, is that, okay, fine, beating City doesn't guarantee that you're going to win the league now, but they don't drop a lot of points. So if you want to think about winning the league in another 30-plus games we've got left, this is one of the games you're going to have to get them to drop some points, and we're in control of it. So I do think it's really important, because it's a fucking long way to go, and... You know, even just having this conversation, talking about us, like, if you want to win the league, like, we've got a chance, is mad. But we should be thinking that way. Conte is definitely thinking that way. I think we are, as Cal said right at the top, there's only two teams that are undefeated. So, look, let's try and keep that going. Like, let's see if we can give them another beating, because we did it last year, and it. And obviously there is something in the way that we play, something about us that just unsettles them. Haaland's obviously going to be another story. Like, we don't know what that's going to look like. And you'd like to say, based on Cal's point, right, you want your defenders as fresh as possible. So I think we will see a little bit of rotation. I think there will be some. I think he won't, like, do a Jose in Europa or the other Farmers one, where he completely changed the 11. But I think there'll be one or two that will rotate. Cool. All right. So, yeah, if you want more preview stuff, then make sure you go to the Patreon, and then you can have that. Patreon.com/TheFightingCock. Right. A couple of questions, and then we will wrap up, boys. Houston Dynapod says, does the massive deadline day spending of Chelsea worry you at all, Cal?
No, not really. I don't really think about other clubs. I just think about Spurs. I just think Tottenham win your games, and we've played Chelsea. Historically, one of our toughest games is Chelsea away, and it's gone. So I'm not going to think about Chelsea now. And they just lost to fucking Southampton and just got let off against West Ham at home. No, they don't worry me. Nobody worries me right now. All I worry about is Spurs. And if Spurs play well, they'll win games and they'll be right up there. No, they don't worry me at all.
About you, Spook?
It's Chelsea, isn't it? They're always going to spend money. I think the chairman, the new owner's probably had to do what he's had to do. Tuchel wasn't that happy earlier in the window, talking about needing more players. They've kind of bought a whole new back line. You know, they've brought in loads of defenders. They've lost a few players who've gone out. It's Chelsea. It's a really poisonous kind of culture at that club, though, because they bring in managers where you almost think the manager's going to be there for like 5-10 years. I know football doesn't work like that anymore, especially top tier elite football managers. They kind of jump to different top tier teams, right? But it feels wasted at Chelsea, because there's something about that club that is poisonous and everything always goes wrong. They just fucking win trophies whilst they're running through that process. So it makes you, it's a weird business model. But if you've got elite players and you're in the habit of buying elite players, you have to replace them with elite players. So it is what they do. But like I said, there's just something not quite right at that football club. And I still don't think they're right this season. I think we're a better team than them, even though arguably they might have better players in consistently over their squad. So let everyone be as good as they can be, because, you know what, we don't want everyone to to kind of bend over like they did with Leicester City. We want everyone to be at their best so that when we do achieve something, we can say we fucked you all over. You know, we beat a City team with Haaland in it. Imagine winning the league this season, how ridiculous that would be. It'd just be pointless to do football anymore. It'd just be quickly retire and you're done. It'd be pointless.
Exactly. Talking of
aim high, man. Sorry, I was just going to say this is it. It's never like with me. It's never like I'll win a league cup and we'll be all right. Or if we finish third, no, fuck it. Let's try and win the league. And wherever we finish is where we deserve to finish. But if we were aiming for top spot, we've done everything in our power. And if we don't reach it, if we don't do it, then we know we've got more levels to climb before we can try again.
100%. That League Cup thing is so true, right? It's like people say to us all the time, oh, what have you won, right? And then Arsenal fans will go to us, oh, well, but we've won the FA Cups. But when they're not talking to us, they're not happy. They're not happy. They don't think they're doing enough. They're like, oh, we're shit, we're fucked. And now it's suddenly like, oh, we're back, we're going to be doing this. Well, I thought you were back because I thought you won two cups. Isn't that what it's all about? Suddenly that's shit again. So it's all just moving the goalposts. It doesn't mean anything. Realistically, the only things that make people go, oh, fucking hell, fair enough, is the Champions League and winning the league. If we do either of those two things, everyone can shut the fuck up forever and I'm going to retire from football. It's going to be great. Talking of Haaland, we were just talking about how ridiculous his start to the season has been. We had a question here from at Ashley DeZulu. One of Lloris, Kane or Romero take out Haaland in the opening minute of the game, but he goes off injured and we go on to win. But whoever took him out gets a 3-match ban because it was borderline ABH. Who are you choosing? So Lloris, Kane or Romero to take the hit, take the fall, Cal? Who are you going for?
Romero, I think, because it's on brand, isn't it? It's what he does. He hurts people.
Yeah.
And I want him to just hurt Haaland. I don't dislike Haaland at all, although it'd be really funny if he scored 45 goals a season and then they finished second to shitty old Spurs. How fucking amazing would that be? Oh, I scored 45 goals. Yeah, but Spurs finished above you and we won the league, you fucking shit mug. But yeah, it would be Romero. It's his job. It's what he's there to do. And then Sanchez. Sanchez is fine. Yeah. Sanchez is absolutely fine as cover. Or as rotation. No problem at all.
I echo Cal's sentiment there. It's got to be Romero.
Yeah, you're on board. I love that. Right, one last question. This is from Reb is Happy. This is a classic Fighting Cock type question, this one, boys. So get ready. Just think about this. Prep your answers. Would you bum your mum to save your missus's life? Now, that is that's a great question. So, Cal, I'm going to come to you first. Would you bum your mum to save your missus's life?
Yes, because... this fuck. Do you know what? This isn't my fault. If I sound like a fucking weirdo, this isn't my fault. It's the question's fault. But you can't make a baby if you do them up the bum. So
why would you wear a condom? Why are you going in raw? Why are you barebacking your mum?
Because I want it to be over. I want it to be over. So just, you know, if you wear rubber, it's going to take longer. So you just go bareback.
Wow.
And it's up the arse, so you can't knock her up anyway. You're not going to have a Fritzel fucking flipper baby coming out.
So you're not pulling out. You're not pulling out either.
Nah. If you're doing it, you might as well do the whole experience. So yeah, I would.
It's kind of like the circle of life, isn't it? If you think about it, right? So someone created you in your mum, and then you're, you know, injecting life into your mum, but this time into her bum, which can't create life. So it's not really the circle of life. So I've sort of fucked.
Didn't the Romans and the Greeks do all this as well? Like it was just normalised back then.
Or just
like in terms of just like being married to someone and then having affairs with their sisters and the rest of it. I mean, we're pretty deprived, the human race, historically. We've always been a bit mad. I mean, to answer the question, I'm single, so fuck it. I'm not sticking my it's up anyone's bum at the minute. So,
Someone's mum eventually will get it, but
without a doubt, some milk somewhere.
Absolutely. I would bum my mum. Yeah. We're not that close, so for me, it's just another notch on the bedpost, isn't it? Just get the numbers up. Why not? Yeah. Something to do, isn't it? And then Ree couldn't be annoyed at me because I'd be like, "Well, I've saved your life." She's like, "Oh, a bit weird, though, isn't it? You sort of cheated on me." And I'm like, "Wow, I haven't saved your life. Saved your life. and added to the body count. So it's a win-win. I'm sure Mum would
absolutely about love ticking it. Life is about ticking boxes. Yeah. It's about doing things and ticking that box on the list. And bumming your mum is like a platinum trophy on PlayStation. Like, not many people have got that trophy. And you just get to tick that box and carry on to the next box.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I think on that note, I think that's the perfect tone to end. We've got Champions League. We are back. We are fucking back against Marseille. Preview pod on Patreon. Go and check it out. And we'll see you beautiful people soon. Spook, love you, brother.
You too, mate. Been fun.
Out. I'll speak to you soon, my geese.
I will see you very soon.
And take care. Come on, you Spurs. Right. Network.